educational assistant of technology. I think it's what it's.
That's in COSAD.
And we've been looking at that center also at how we can work together more effectively.
Denise and I attended the Transition Advisory Committee meeting there, and I sit on that committee, and I've asked Denise to attend too, and then Shirley will attend as well as James, so that they have an idea statewide. The Transition Advisory Committee is made up of transition counselors and Department of Education. Sally sits on that one also, and that is, it covers a much wider range than we do in the transition team, but it really is, it's been very, very interesting and very helpful information.
I had a question about the, on the collaborative effort that's being made. Where there's the Department of Education and the school systems and so forth. I'm wondering if the entities like the Parents of Blind Children Division of the Federation and you know, things like that have been informed about that, are approached about it, or have anybody on that, or how have you come about who is on that kind of, that
Jan
kind of
Anderson is one parent who sits on it, has not been able to attend for some time. With revising and refining the parent or the membership list, that just happened. And the teachers and the counselors who sit on that program and are on that committee, as well as Sally and Tom Fortune and Donna Haltman, both have indicated that they have some folks in mind. That's what the discussion was on that particular day.
We sent a notice also to the president of the Parents Division or the Nebraska Association of Blind Parents. We haven't heard from her yet.
Okay. Yeah, because I was trying to figure out if this was an entity that basically, you know, chooses its the people who are on it, or if it is an open-ended thing where entities that exist have the opportunity to be a part of it.
As the membership was identified, we will be sticking with that. That brings us to 17 members on that transition team. We are not in charge of that team. I do happen to chair it, but our commission is not in charge of it. It was a true collaborative effort with the Department of Education. It has a great deal to do with it, and Nebraska Center for the Education of Blind Children. So. Saying that, I can't influence beyond everyone else's agreement of where we find people, although they've certainly been open to any suggestion for looking anywhere where there might be someone willing. We also have a member of the Nebraska Parents Center who sits on that committee. So.
Okay, does anybody have any other questions? That was a very informative report from both of you, and thank you very much. There's a lot going on.
Yes, and I just finished the grant report, so this is very fresh in my mind. So.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I may, Karen mentioned this sort of a training for the transition specialists that's proposed to
be done. By Sally Gettinger?
By Jack and Sally?
Yes. And my understanding was that that was to kind of fill people in, the transition people, that is, on who the resource people, the key resource people are around the state, that sort of thing, so they know how to hook up with them and that sort of thing.
That's part of it, but also the politics of each school system, because that does vary one to the other, identifying who you talk to in that school system. Sometimes it's the superintendent, but a lot of times it's the resource teacher. And it's just nice to have some information when you go in.
I was just thinking, you know, a reciprocal kind of thing might be interesting. When you get those key people into the commission for some training.
Well, that'll be part of the transition counselor's responsibility, certainly, is to provide information. And I know that in the Lincoln District, we're very free at offering to schedule tours and that kind of thing. So it's certainly a possibility.
Okay. Well, Mike speaking up reminded me that there, I think, have been some people who have come in since we first went around and introduced ourselves as to who was here. And, you know, I don't ask for that in order to, you know, embarrass anybody, but it is always good to know who's here and who we're speaking to and who's speaking to us. So, you know, if those of you who came in after we got started, I guess the way I can say it is, if you haven't introduced yourself yet, now is the time.
Michael Floyd, and apologize for not introducing myself to you.
That's okay.
Bob Eaton. I came in late.
Della Johnston.
Okay.
Tammy Larson from North Platte.
What happened?
Okay. Anyone else? Well, welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
And generally, what we have done, we do have a place in the agenda for public comment, but what we have also done is to officially leave it up to the chairman as to whether we accept public comment within the rest of the meeting. I have generally tended to do that. The only time that I haven't done that is if we are running really long, either on a specific topic or in general, and then I may make the decision, but I certainly let people know before I just kind of decide that. So that's kind of how we'll proceed today. The next item on the agenda is the report from the chairman, and because we have a lot of things to do, I'm going to keep that short. When it comes to the situation with the budget and the statewide cost allocation and things like that, between February and now, there have been some discussions with people about that. There was a meeting with Jerry Oligmuller and Lynn Heaton on the 12th of March, where we talked about why it was that there seemed to be such a difference between what used to happen in the statewide cost allocation and what is now happening. And they sent us some information that talks about how the fact that we are now a separate entity does make some differences, but not necessarily major ones. And we're still, as far as I know, looking into either creative ways of dealing with that or ways of helping there to be possibly a slightly different perspective on it from what happened at the end of the relationship with the Health and Human Services system and the beginning of our being a commission. And if anybody has anything to add to that or a reinterpretation of it or whatever, please fill me in, and I'll be glad to know that. But that's what my perspective is on it at this point. We also were still at that point in the process of figuring out what, if anything, could be done about the fact that the transitional phase, when it happened, concerning the amount of money that was transferred from the Health and Human Services system to the commission was accurately done. In some ways, that's one of those deals where maybe nobody will ever know. But the bottom line is that at this point, the budget that was submitted at the budget hearing, which was somewhat above what the governor had originally talked about approving, did get approved. So, you know, we're better off than we could have been, but not as well off as maybe we should have been. But that we had meetings with, there was a meeting with Senator Foley on the 19th of March about that, and then we had stayed in touch with folks during the appropriation process. In some ways, we're fortunate that we didn't just get told that Well, that was one of the things that was agreed to on the line item thing when the governor put out his notice of what he would do, that we did come out better off than that. So that's the good news. And what that again means is that we need to really be focusing on getting the Friends group organized and visible and functioning, and any other entities or methods of bringing in funds. And also we need to begin to have some discussions about redirecting some funds, possibly. That is part of what we are appointed to do, and although we may have some, well, we will have some hard decisions to make, we really do need to do that, because that is, as I say, what we're supposed to be doing. In terms of other kinds of things that have been going on, we have certainly been kept abreast of what's going on within the commission in terms of staff changes and other things. Pearl has sent us messages and made sure that we are aware when changes are occurring, and we appreciate that, because as people who are given the responsibility of knowing what's going on and making decisions about it, it is really helpful when we're kept informed, so that we aren't surprised by things that happen, that people might be wanting to ask us questions about. I think really those are the main things that I wanted to bring as chairman of the board. There are a lot of other kinds of things on the agenda that other people will be talking about and dealing with, and unless people have questions specifically of me, we'll move along on the agenda.
This is Pearl. I have a question.
Okay.
On the staff updates, it occurs to me that instead of just, I did let you know that some people were no longer with the commission and have tried to do that, but I don't know that I've done it when we've made a hiring decision. We bring that information to quarterly meetings, which is certainly not current, unless there was a lot of recent activity, so the information you'll get today is sort of current. But perhaps what we should do is every time there's, when a decision is made to hire a person, we offer the job and they say yes, that we inform you of that.
I would appreciate that.
Okay. And I apologize that we haven't been on top of that, and of course when there are other changes, to let you know as soon as we know, so we'll get better at that.
Along those lines, when we get those personnel updates, is it what could be provided that would be like an organizational chart that has each of the different offices and who works there, and mm-hmm. Just to have as a resource, because I know a lot of times the names all run together in my head, who's,
yeah.
And if I had an overall list, then I could, make more sense to me as to where that fits in. And I don't know, I don't know how much, but, even if there's something readily available, like, mm-hmm. How long they've been, with the services, or just some, I suppose maybe, I don't know if providing salary gets too personal, but just something that you could look at and kind of have, at a glance make sense of an office to say, yeah, this is, just going over some key points, and then it would just be a better
That's
idea.
That's easily done. Yeah, we'll get that done. That's a good idea.
Well, one thing that would maybe kind of dovetail off of that is if once that thing exists, then when a staff change happens, if it was pretty much a position where one person left and somebody else came into that position, that would be useful to mm-hmm. to know that, and you know, that way we would, like
just
Bob was saying.
Just update that list.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Good idea. We'll do that, won't we, Dan?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, if there aren't any further questions of me or comments to me, we'll go on to the next item, which is the report from the executive director.
Thank you. And what I'm trying to address in this portion of the agenda are the things which are not listed under old and new business. So and, a lot of it ties together, but I'll try to keep it focused. And feel free to ask me questions at any time, please. First of all, a report on our services to clients. You received your handouts about the voc rehab and independent living client statistics. These are as of March 31st, so they cover the first two quarters of the federal fiscal year. I'll just hit some of the highlights of these figures. For the vocational rehabilitation component of our service system, we had 129 people apply for services within those two quarters. And those were added to 20 persons who were on hand at the beginning of the year. Of those, so that's 149 available. 70 people were accepted for services, 18 were not. 16 remain in an applicant status. And there were 326 persons in active status at the beginning of the year, with a total of 396 for those that were brought in since the beginning as eligible. 36 were closed, successful 26 closures, and then 7 successful post-employment, so that makes 43 total closures. 14 closed unsuccessful, that is after an individualized plan for employment was developed. Let's see, 424 persons remain in active status, and the total number served in all statuses is 508. The kinds of jobs that folks have been doing this year, a lot of clerical positions, bookkeeper, business administration, some child care service people, food services, hotel steward, and such like. There was one in particular that a team from Lincoln worked very hard on to develop some special technology, and this was with the Department of Revenue. Carlos spoke a little bit about that at the council meeting. Would you recap that a little bit for us, Carlos?
Sure. The Department of Revenue had a telephone system which was not accessible for a blind person to operate. So the Lincoln District basically, with the initiative of Larry Mackey, started a project on making it accessible. When the client started to work there, the Department of Revenue was very supportive. The client was willing to do as much as she could. Once again, the problem was that the technology wasn't there yet. So with that, they started to look around the country, basically, and couldn't find any thing that was that could make that system accessible, and finally they found someone in Canada that was willing to try to make it accessible. And that person, or they sent someone who was coming to the U.S. anyways to take a look at the system. They took a copy of the software to Canada and developed a new program. Now all of this sounds very simple and easy, but it took maybe 2 months to get the system done. So we got the first prototype, which is now on the Nebraska Department of Revenue. And this is a type of national program that many state agencies use in the nation. So this particular effort, which started in Lincoln, will allow not only state agencies to provide jobs to other blind folks in Nebraska, but also across the country. Am I missing anything, bro? Or
I think that's the, I mean, we don't want to, those are really the main things about it. It's pretty exciting. The folks at the Department of Revenue are very sold on this person as an employee and very pleased with her work, and they're also very encouraged that our folks did the legwork and did the research and, you know, kept pushing at, because there was quite a period where it was very frustrating for staff, for the individual, you know, it was really a difficult process, but they kept at it, and so it's going to help other blind people in other positions elsewhere down the road. Carlos?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that this type of situation comes up in many job settings in which our counselors have to find a way that clients will have success in a placement. So it's not just this one. This one is very innovative because of the new technology, but we face those situations all over. It's just an example of what our counselors go through. Mm-hmm.
So, any questions about the voc rehab part?
I have a question. You know, mentioned the success and the success stories and the, you know, some of the close and failure. Is there a way that the, you know, the counselors share, you know, the experiences so they're, you know, maybe they can learn from, you know, or, you know, shared learning rather than each one kind of reinventing the wheel?
Yes, we do try to do that a lot. At office meetings, certainly at district meetings. Email is a terrific tool for that as well because, for example, Larry was able then to send the brochure, the information about this equipment, as well as a whole description of the process and all that was involved, to all the staff at once. And, you know, they really do quite a lot of sharing ideas and things. And I know I was in Lincoln the other day just getting a cup of coffee, and the Lincoln district was having a meeting. I heard a portion of the discussion, but it was about in working with a person on the Braille and Speak and dealing with some challenges and problems they had, and they were brainstorming, okay, try this, have you tried that? And, you know, so I would say that's really an ongoing process.
When we hire a new staff, we take them also to visit few of the placements we have, and we do a recap of the history behind the placement. And it wasn't easy, and what it took, and basically it's the good attitude and the willingness to place somebody.
Right. The other thing I'd like to talk about before we leave for vocational rehabilitation is with the new Rehab Act and the new regulations. Rehab Act was 1998, the regulations were just implemented in April, but who's counting? Anyway, part of that are new standards and indicators by which we as an agency are judged, and we have to meet specific quantifiable levels of work. They start out with looking at our performance from fiscal year 1999, and then that's the baseline, and they will be evaluating the fiscal year 2000 and then every year. And just in brief, I wanted to let you know there are six indicators, three primary and three secondary indicators that we have to meet standards. You have to pass that is equal or exceed two of the three primary indicators and four out of the six overall. They include a change in number of employment outcomes has to either be equal or greater than your previous year, so you're compared to yourself and not Texas or somewhere else. The percent of the people served who become employed, the percent who become employed competitively, percent that have a significant disability, the earnings ratio, and that is compared to the ratio of the people we serve who get jobs compared to the ratio of average earnings in the society as a whole. And then the last one is self-support, that is where the primary income of the household or the person, maybe that's it, is from that person, and that they are being supported by someone else, whether it's a person or a government. We at present, well, for our 99 data, we met or exceeded every single one of the six. So that's pretty exciting.
Wow, congratulations.
And the only one we were less, the standard is 35.4%, and we were 34.97. So we, and all the others we met or exceeded the standard. So we'll be looking at that every year, and in fact, next week, the RSA, Rehab Services Administration representative from Kansas City will be here monitoring the agency again, and so we'll be looking at the, analyzing the FY 2000 data compared to the 99. Anything else on voc rehab? Okay. The independent living statistics, we had, let me just briefly tell you that we served 598 people in all statuses, and 415 were active clients. So that's maybe the main thing you want to know there.
Is the independent living all, is that just elderly?
It's primarily elderly, but it does also serve children. The transition is just age 14 to 26. And so prior to that, and prior to becoming a voc rehab client, the children are in the IL track. And in some cases, there are people between childhood and late life being 55, according to the feds, who, you know, maybe say a 30-year-old who has some mental health issues, maybe substance abuse issues, a number of factors that really prevents them from being eligible for the vocational rehabilitation program. Of course, I'm not stating it quite clearly, but there are some people with complications that make them not really either want to be a voc rehab client or eligible for voc rehab.
Do you know what the breakdown is of that total number? How, which would fit into which category?
Oh,
it's fairly small. I do know that when you break out the consumer satisfaction surveys that we just sent out, and that's only sent to the people that were closed, we sent out, and that's for a period of 6 months, 94 surveys were sent to people over 55, and 22 were sent to people under 55. No, and that's large because there are two different surveys. The feds require that we use a survey developed by Mississippi State to send to the over 55. And then there's a simpler form that I think more better meets our needs as a commission that we send to people under 55.
Also remember that some people over age 55, many people over age 55, are eligible for vocational rehabilitation services. So just because, even, you know, an 80-year-old, we've served plenty of people that are 70s and 80s that went to work, got jobs, had employment goals. So the age alone doesn't make them go into the independent living track. But the majority do tend to be older. Any other questions on that?
Do you make the determination if they're, you know, to do the independent living, if they're vocational, still age, or?
No, we pretty much offer, explain what the services of the agency are.
No, and they choose.
And they indicate what their choices are with regard
essentially,
to
essentially, it boils down to whether or not they have a vocational goal.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
I'll keep kind of zipping through things here. Back to the issue of the staff update. It occurred to me when Barbara was talking, I hadn't given you some of the changes. I did let you know that Peg Halverson and Amy Connery are no longer with us. The hiring process for the position for the computer and communications instructor in the center is still ongoing. We've interviewed three people and hope to decide within this next week. We have hired, as Karen mentioned, the transition counselor for Omaha. We also have hired, and on May 7th, Larry Roos started as the in training to become the North Platte voc rehab counselor to take Denise Johnston Ronarkus's place. Larry Roos, well, in that case, the person we hired was only in the training for a relatively shorter period of time, and we had a very good second candidate that we actually, you know, were really torn between Amy and Larry when we did the first hire. And so we did go to personnel and ask if we could just offer it to the second choice, and they allowed us to do that. So we didn't have to reopen that, and we're able to get that moving sooner. He accepted. Fortunately, he didn't already have another position. And then Char Shives from Omaha is leaving May 30th. She's retiring, and we're going to miss her. It's very rare that we can manage to hire before someone leaves, but because of the uniqueness of her position, we really don't have anybody in Omaha that knows everything that she does. So we were able to go ahead and hire. Carol Frink has just been hired, and she will start this next Monday, May 21st. We want to take advantage of the time that Char is still here, so she will be in the Omaha office working with Char to learn that job, and of course coming into Lincoln to meet with our HR person who does all the paying of the bills and entering of things, and he will teach her a lot as well. And then Suzette Ingram is leaving August 3rd. She's been with us a long time as an orientation teacher, and she also, for a fairly long time, has had a goal of teaching in the school system. And so she begins her student teaching this fall. So we're going to lose Suzette, and we'll be opening that, looking to hire in September. And I think maybe on staff updates I can go ahead and say that the contract that was recently finalized to begin July 1, 2001, this is the labor contract I'm speaking of, did allow for 2% raises for people in pay grades 1 through 9 and 1.5% for grades 10 and above. So the contract covered people will have those raises. Administrative raises, we are still looking to personnel, then Department of Administrative Services comes out with an edict, I guess you'd say, of telling what we can do and what flexibility we might have as an agency in granting administrative wages or raises. So that's something with regard to the staff updates. Let's see if there was anything else in that. I guess I did forget to say I wanted to thank Marietta Sims from here in Kearney. It worked with Jan and with the Kearney Hub to make sure that the announcement about the meetings would be in the Hub. I thought I'd see Marietta today, but she must have had some conflicts. But she did work to, at least we got it in the local paper.
Pearl.
Yes.
I don't know that it was in print. I think it was over their talking Hub.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Well, this is graduation here, so that's why
I
so
know.
Many people didn't show up.
Yeah.
That would normally have showed up.
Right. So at least we get the word out. So, okay. Now, we did just a couple of days ago receive a memo from the governor's office from Vicki Powell, the administrative assistant for boards and commissions, seeking nominations for anyone who might be interested in serving the state under Governor Johans as a board or commission member, and they sent us the print form. They also sent us the website. You can apply on the web, and you probably all know that Dorothy and Maya's terms do expire December 31st. Now, I said in the last meeting, and maybe Barbara can tell me if I'm wrong, that I was thinking that if you are already serving a term which is going to expire, that you would, excuse me, that you would apply again. Do you think that's correct? Or, I mean, if you wanted to serve again, that you would go through the application process again? Does anybody know?
I think you have to.
I think you do.
Okay. Well, at the time that I said it this morning, it sounded good, and then now that I'm saying it, I was doubting myself, so, okay.
I don't know for sure.
Anyway. So that's something, you know, for folks to consider, and we'll send the print form to people. And of course you can copy it for anyone that you think might be interested.
Is the website that people apply on accessible?
Well, probably. It's one of the state websites, and you know, I guess I've heard different reports about our state websites, whether they are or not. I don't know if anybody's gone to this one, but it's the gov.nol.org and a couple of slash things. I'll give you the information later, but that's a good question. If one of you find differently, I hope you'll let us know, and we'll, or I know, and of course let the governor's office know too, but do let us know about that. Okay, the next thing is Dave Robinson, our HR person, sent an email to all of you yesterday at the end of the morning, and he gave me a copy of it since he had done this so late, so I'll just read it. Good morning, everyone. Having forgotten to give you folks this update at the end of March, I figured now would be a good time with your upcoming meeting. I should have mentioned the subject is Pearl's vacation leave status. If any of you have not had a chance to read this before your meeting on May 19th, I will have sent a printed copy along with Pearl to present at the meeting. Pearl ended year 2000 with 240.89 hours of accrued vacation. As of today, she has used 71 hours of vacation leave in 2001. Between the vacation she's earned and used this year, her balance as of today is 239.19 hours. Projecting ahead, taking into account what she will earn the rest of the year, she will need to use 82 hours more this year in order to get under the 280-hour carryover allowed. I hope this provides you all with what you need. But should you need anything further, please don't hesitate to contact me. Have a good meeting, Dave Robinson. So you'll recall that you had asked for
yes.
a quarterly update. So he will try to do that before the meetings in the future for you. Okay, I'm barreling on unless there's questions. The RSA does a monitoring review. It's called a Section 107 annual monitoring review, but for a lot of years they would do it about, I don't know, once every 5 years or so, it seemed like, but we had one last year and we'll have one again next week. The results of last year's, there really were just two areas where they had recommendations. One was focus area number 4, dealing with the IPEs. And on that, we were just needing to include a specific place on our IPE form where we identify providers and procurement methods for any services that were provided and or that are provided. And so we've added a place in the IPE where that, you know, specifically has to be filled in, so the counselor knows they need to put that in. So that the plan doesn't just say that they're going to college, they're going to the University of Nebraska at Kearney, and you know, that we're paying the tuition or whatever, however that works. But so there's a specific place for that to be addressed in the plan. And that has already been changed, is that right, on the form, Carlos?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Focus Area 7 deals with a number of things. The only thing that we needed to do differently was on the 26 closure letters, 26 being the status of successful employment, that we add a statement about terms and conditions on that closure letter. Basically, again, just informing the individual of their rights and responsibilities and you know, anything specific to complaints that they might have. And that has already been added, right?
Correct.
So by May 31st, we need to document these changes to them, and so we'll be putting together a letter with copies of those documents to show what we've done. Okay. One thing came up in, I was discussing audits with Tanya Wendell, the director of the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, and she had just completed the exit interview of a complete audit that was done on their commission, and the auditors had decided that she should have for any time that she took a trip within the state to even, I mean, obviously, to do commission business, that she should have received board approval for that, especially if she was putting in personal mileage. And so I would suggest that, or request that you would consider, I certainly don't want to have to get into every time I would need to make a trip for my work, and usually I don't know if I almost never use a personal car and personal mileage unless there's just no car available. And to have to then be at that point and get approval would really be cumbersome. So, but the auditors did say, well, if your board had already had a statement, you know, approving, say for, it could be a yearly basis, approval for the executive director to use a personal car or whatever resources deemed necessary as needed for commission business, something of that nature. Of course, if I, you know, were to ever use something that was, didn't show good judgment that you thought was covered in that statement, you could still, you know, censure that director for doing that. So it's not like it gives you carte blanche to do whatever you want.
Public flogging.
Right. Anyway, I was, you know, I just thought I'd bring that to you and...
So you want, you need that statement in writing or just...
Yes, it would have to be...
We just couldn't make a motion here?
Well, if you made a motion, it would become in the written record and then mm-hmm. it could be, then I suppose the appropriate thing would be a memorandum to... I suppose to the business manager and to the executive director to document this is what we approve.
So I'll make a motion that if the director needs to travel and there's no state car available, that she, if she uses, can use her own car and be reimbursed accordingly for the mileage used.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that if there is no state car available, the executive director of the commission be reimbursed for mileage using a personal vehicle. Is there a discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Okay.
Very good. That will help. Okay, I wanted to let you know we've been working in many ways to enhance our informed choice process to make sure that clients know what they what their choices are and have a full scope of ideas about what's available and really have a sense of what it is that the commission is doing for them and, you know, just kind of a full circle of communication. One piece of what we've started doing is that when we write purchase order authorizations for tuition or technology or whatever it is that we're providing for them as a part of their case, we're having the client to sign that document also. As it was, it's just the counselor signs it and then a supervisor or someone approves it, but now the client will also sign it. We will not hold up or delay services just to get a signature, and we won't hop in our car and drive to Alliance just to get a signature. But when we're there, when we can get the signature or do it,